Are we meeting next week?
No.
No, right? I'm also getting a yard sign chair. Yeah, so we're going to take one. Okay. So.
don't tell why.
Exactly.
So, you know, getting drinks with the drink room and everything. Well, I haven't. I could always think. So last week we started actually discussing the text of Ubikash Benisham, and I was also trying to put it in context of the role of Shir HaShirim generally, and why I think that the Rav particularly zeroed in on Shir HaShirim in many of his essays, and that why he found it to be, you know, kind of a perfect vehicle to express the unexpressible in a way through the idea of a shir, and this particular shir especially. So partly what I was quoting was the Rambam of Sefer Torah, who says that basically Ksiva Sefer Torah is the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, as we know, is based on the pasuk of Kispu Lachem Esashira Hazos. And that that in itself, you know, really reflects, I think, the idea of the centrality of Shira. The Rambam here says that Mitzasei Al Kol Yishvi Yishmi Yisrael Lichto Sefer Torah Li'atzmo Shenema Ata Kitzvu Lachem Sa Shira Kloma Kitzvu Lachem Torah Sheyesh Ba Shira Zu. So again, it's, you couldn't want a better formulation for, you know, the Torah, which, you know, is defined or redefined, or which gains stature by the fact that there is Shira in it. It's like a chalos in Torah. It's Dabar Sheyesh Ba Shira. And then he says, "Lefisha in Kosun is a Torah Parshios Parshios." And that, I was suggesting, could be understood in the narrowest, most technical way, as just meaning a technicality. It's really, really, you should be writing the Shira. You can't write the Shira, so you have to write the whole Sefer Torah. And, you know, that in itself, if it's true, is certainly one way to read the Rambam, would be a very powerful comment, because obviously, you know, the effort and the expense, you know, to write Kol HaTorah Kula just so you can have the Shira may be necessary, but I can't imagine that that doesn't further reinforce the idea that, you know, Sheyesh Bashira, the chalos of Sefer Sheyesh Bashira, you know, isn't an important thing. Because I was suggesting beyond that the form of Shira and the idea of Ein Kos in Torah Prakim Prakim also comes from the same place, and that's what makes Shira, you know, again, the emblem, if you will, or the embodiment of Ksiva Sefer Torah and everything that goes with it. And that is that, what I was saying before, Shira is something that is more than the sum of its parts. It's something that is, I'm not sure why everybody is trying to contact me today. A shir is something that's more than the sum of its parts, and, you know, it makes, as I say, accessible something that should be inexpressible. And in a way, that's what Kol HaTorah Kula is, because Kishem Hashem Ekra Godel Elokeinu. It's a Shemos Hashem, which we shouldn't have access to, but we do. And we do, because that's part of our Tzakon Shemaruch Hu L'Zakos is Yisrael. But the reason that we do also is because of the recognition that Ein Kosvin, you know, as a Torah, Parshios Parshios, you can't take things and just, you know, kind of take them out of context, and that Torah itself is more than the sum of its parts. It's a interconnected, holistic whole. So the perfect vehicle is Shira, the perfect vehicle is... That's my suggestion, that. But I think that all of this goes to the heart and core of what a Shir and a Shira is. Then we say Shir HaShirim Kodesh HaKadashim, Kodesh Kadashim, I explained last week. On the one hand, it seems the most problematic of the Svarim in Tanakh, and of the Shiras as well, because it is so intense and seemingly so graphic, and it does seem to touch on emotions that are very human in their intenseness. And then, you know, if that is Kodesh HaKadoshim, then it not only bespeaks of the capacity to elevate the, which I want to talk more about, you know, the physical and the seemingly, you know, crude in life, and then to turn that into something that is truly, you know, in, almost ineffable, and then that describes Avodas Hashem, and that itself is Kodesh HaKadoshim, both because it's more tzanua, but because it also gives us this ability to go through these steps, right, to develop, to cultivate that kesher with the Ribbono Shel Olam that is on the one hand most indispensable and also most impossible. So that's really, I was suggesting that that's kind of the background. Rav doesn't say any of this, he just talks about it being Kodesh HaKadoshim, but of what Bikashta Misham is about. And of course it's a metaphor for our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Rav speaks about it in terms of the world, I mean the universal relationship of man and God, or, you know, the creation and the creator. That's both of those, that's the universalistic aspect, that as well as, you know, Kal Yisrael, more specifically the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that of course also comes from the Rambam here in Perek Yud Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam talks about Avas Hashem. We'll talk about this more in a minute, but the Rambam elevates the concept of human love as a proper metaphor for the love of the Ribbono Shel Olam, again by making reference to the mashal of Shir HaShirim. So the Rambam says, "Ketzad Yahava Haruya Sheyehav." This is Perek, you know, Yod Halacha Gimel. Sheyehav Es Hashem Ava Gedola Yisera Azam Yod. Azam is a strong word, a fierce love. Adche Teinav Shokshura Ba'Avas Hashem. Right, V'Nimtza Shoge Ba'Tamid. Like, this is language that, you know, speaks of the ferocity of the love, and also of its intensity, and especially that, you know, it becoming obsessive, but a good obsessive in this case. Shogeba tamid, kilu chole, choli ha'ava, lovesick, right? She'en daito p'nuya me'avas osa ha'isha, hu shogeba tamid, bein b'shifto, bein b'kumo, right? Bein b'shashu ocha b'shosa, like an all-consuming, all, you know, distracting love. Yoter mize tia avas Hashem b'leiv o avav, shogim ba tamid, k'moshe tzivonu b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshecha, v'hu sheshlomo amar derech mashal ki cholas ahava ani, right, b'chol shir ashirim mashal hu l'inyan hazeh. So this is the Rambam's statement, that shir ashirim is a metaphor for the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yisrael. Individuals, Knesset Yisrael also has an element of humanity that remains to be seen, but certainly some aspect of the relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it's interesting to note that this chapter in the Rambam is not the Rav. I'm saying this myself for a moment just to get further appreciation of the background. This is the final chapter of Hilchos Tshuva. So you could say that this is the culmination, if you will, of Hilchos Tshuva. It's the culmination of Sefer Mad, and it's about Avas Hashem, and the Avas Hashem that is expressed through Shir HaShirim. And again, surely that's no coincidence. I think on the one hand, this is a, you know, a speculation on my part. This is where the Rambam writes of the highest level of tshuva. Even though there's nothing in here about tshuva, really, but it's the end of Hilchos Tshuva, right? But what's fascinating is that the Rambam omits tshuva me'ava, of which the Gemara has in Yuma, as being, you know, gedola, you know, tshuva me'ava, you know, it turns zdonos into zchuyos. Tshuva me'ira turns zdonos into shkogos. Tshuva me'ava turns zdonos into zchuyos. Right, a very obviously fascinating and very far-reaching, you know, idea. The Rambam never codifies that, even though the Rambam spent so much time in Hilchos Tshuva, right, he devoted a whole, you know, a fine final section in, say, Pramana, 10 chapters by, you know, compiling. There's no Gemara about Tshuva. There are, you know, some pieces in Titus and some pieces in Yuma and some pieces in Rosh Hashanah and, you know, a little here from Bava Basra and, you know, so on and so forth. So the Rambam made this Herculean effort to gather together Chos Tshuva from all over. And then, like, the, you know, the apex of the Chos Tshuva, he doesn't speak about, seemingly, because he never quotes those two Mamare Chazal. Very shocking. He has almost everything else and more. But I think, this is my speculation, that the Rambam's conclusion of the Chos Tshuva with Avas Hashem, and the reference to Shir HaShirim, is his, you know, rendering of Tshuva Me'ava, or the idea behind Tshuva Me'ava. The Rambam in general felt that Tshuva isn't just a way of neutralizing Chatayim, but that Tshuva is like a major dimension of Avodas Hashem. That's what it's doing in Sefer Ma'at. It's the culmination of Sefer Ma'at. You have, you know, Yisodi HaTorah, you have Avodah Zarah, you have Talmud Torah, right? And then you have Hilchos Tshuva. So by concluding with Avas Hashem and Shir HaShirim, in a way, the Rambam is, you know, completing what he began in the beginning of Sefer Ma'adah, in the beginning of the Chos Yisodi HaTorah, not Perek Aleph. Perek Aleph is devoted to Metzios Hashem. But Perek Beis is already Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, which we'll talk about. If the real theme that will be Kashta Misham, you know, is this broader process, but it's the balance of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. So it's interesting, you know, in the background, just to understand that the Rambam, as early as he possibly can in Sefer Ma'adah, speaks about Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. Ezu Yiraso, Ezu Avaso. The way he speaks about it is fascinating, and we'll get back to that, especially in light of some of the things the Rambam says about it. But he also concludes, you know, Hilchos Tshuva, which is the end of Sefer Ma'adah, again with the apex of Avas Hashem. So I think when we look at Shir HaShirim as a framework, these are helpful things, you know, to keep in mind. So what we were discussing last time is that in the first chapter of Ubikashna Misham, the Rav describes this kind of, you know, contest, struggle, you know, dialectic, whatever you want to call it, you know, between, you know, longing, you know, and marching, you know, to achieve, you know, culmination of this sense of yearning and aspiration on the one hand, and then, you know, people, both sides, like, disappearing at the moment, you know, when the relationship is just about to be consummated. And one of the things I was saying at the very, very end, I was trying to say two things. Number one, that the kesher to Shabbos and to Ben Hashmashos of Shabbos is perhaps, again, intentionally or subconsciously, or if not, I just think it fits in, from my point of view, like a perfect background for this perspective on Shir HaShirim, because it is the most visible symbol of the mabar, of the transition from Chol to Kodesh. And Ben Hashmashos in particular, and in the world of Brisk, Ben Hashmashos isn't just like a, you know, a transition, even if it's, you know, an imprecisely known transition. It's more than that. It's a stira of Yom Malayla, or a stira, in this case, of Kodesh and Chol, you know, and that is very matim. It's very appropriate for Shir HaShirim to kind of be the, you know, the surrounding music, if you will, of this transition, and particularly of Ben Hashmashos, you know, transition into Shabbos. And this, you know, kind of what seems to be like a game, as he puts it, but what's the point of the game? Obviously, it isn't a game between the Ravon Shalom and Klal Yisrael. Is an imbalanced one. That was the last point I was trying to make. And that is that, you know, when it comes to the Ravon Shalom part, it seems all very calculated. Albeit, it's also fascinating that there is, again, kivyachol, you know, divra Torah k'lashon b'nei adam, that's all you can do in connection with the Ravona Sholem, but there's this sense of both longing and passion that Shir HaShirim describes. This is nothing to do with the Rav, this is just in Shir HaShirim itself, which is what makes it problematic and also, you know, perfect, but also disappointment. In other words, when everything is delayed and the relationship is not consummated, right, there's this palpable, you know, sense of despondency, which again, libertorical shom b'nei adam. But in the case of the Ribono Shalom, it's all clearly calculated. It's part of like an investment, you know, in a process that can only pay off, you know, if the stakes are raised and if, you know, lessons are learned along the way, you know, and this process and its various phases are adhered to. Whereas when it comes to the human side, the suggestion of laziness or fatigue, you know, spiritual fatigue, some selfishness, as part at least of the initial, you know, incapacity, you know, to follow through and to be consistent, you know, to be there, kol dodito fake, you know, to answer the knock, that's implied by the psukim, and that's something that the Rav brings out as well. So I think that that, again, is very intentional, because, of course, the whole purpose of the exercise in the end is, you know, for man in stages to develop, you know, this, you know, to go from a superficial or an attainable yearning, you know, or aspiration to achieve this bond to a point where, you know, he's become transformed in the process. You know, he's more aware of his limitations. He's able to kind of, you know, be, you know, purified or purged, maybe the better word for it, of some of these, you know, detrimental obstacles. You know, the laziness, the spiritual fatigue, the selfishness, etc. All of this, you know, requires, you can't just wave a wand. It's not just the, you know, intellectual, you know, information that's going to change all that. It's the process of having, you know, experienced these highs, these lows, this potential, you know, of having come short and then having a more profound understanding of what's at stake, you know, and so on and so forth. Much the same way, I might add, this is not the Rav, this is my, back to me again, much the same way as the idea of tshuva me'ava, which itself, the way I understand it, you know, it seems to be like a very mystical idea, the idea of, you know, of donos that are nas and zechuyos. But the rational way to understand it is that, you know, sometimes people have to, you know, sometimes people don't appreciate fully, you know, what is important and, you know, what is defining, right, in their lives. And coming to grips with that, even though, you know, what the catalyst may have been a negative, say chet, but the sense of alienation and feeling of distance is something that, you know, can profoundly trigger, you know, a change in a person who, like, all of a sudden comes to grip, you know, with, you know, the purpose of his existence. So from that point of view, you never chote kidei, you know, shatizkev, but the point is that, you know, if you respond properly to chet and in the process of tshuva, so in the aggregate, you know, it's in the overall, you can come out much ahead. You can see it as a process, and that's why I think it's in Sefer Mada. It is Hilchos Tshuva. It's not just like a good strategy how to get rid of your chataim or the, you know, the demerits that come with it. It's, you know, really like an avoda, and the sea of that avoda with a sin, meaning the apex of it, is this idea of Avas Hashem, right? Al Yomer Adam Harini Osa Mitzvah Satorah Viosik B'Chok Masa Kadesh Hakabel Kol Abrochos Aksuvos Ba Kadesh Ezkel Chayo Lamaba, right? The Efrosh Min Averosh Ezira Torah Ben Kadesh Sheinatzel Min Aklolos Aksuvos Ba Torah. So Ovid Al Derech Zeu Ovid Derech. Ovid Miyira, Dina Malas and Mavir, Bulamalas Hakamin, Ain Odom Hashem Al Derek Zel, Ame Aretz, Anashim Aktanin, Shemechanchen osan lava biyira ad shetar badata viabdu biaba. Ha'oved biaba osik b'torah the mitzvos holach mitzivah zachachma. Lo mibnei davar va'olam v'lo mibnei yiras ha'ra'a. V'lo k'tei lirash tova. Hel osa ha'emetz v'pnei shu emetz v'sof ha'tova lavo b'glala. Malazu hi malagadola ma'od en kochacham zokhala. Pi malas avram avinu shakaroa kodesh baruch hu ohavi ohavo. Pasuk is Abraham Ohavi. Lefishala Ovan Elami Abba, the Amala Shitsivano Kodesh Baruch Hu de Moshe, Shnabri Haftas Hashem Lokach, Zman Shiyeho Vanamasad Abba, Aruya Miad Yase, Kolomitsos Mi Abba. And then come Ketzan the Abba, the piece that I read before. So, in a way, this is what I'm trying to suggest is going on in Shir HaShirim with the unequal, seemingly identical, you know, dance going on between the, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam and Knesset Yisrael, but it really is quite, really quite different. And this leads us to the next chapter.
Sorry, just going back on what I'm missing in the Ronin itself, is that going to redefine how what Tshuva means? In other words, when the Gemara says Tshuva Me'aba, according to the Rambam,
yeah. It
doesn't mean the same thing as, you know, when we say Tshuva Me'ira, you know, repenting on sins.
Well, the Rambam doesn't speak about tshuva me'ava and tshuva me'ira. He's in Perikyot.
Right.
He speaks about avoda me'ava and avoda me'ira.
Okay.
Even though it's the last chapter of the Hilchos Tshuva. I think, this is where I speculate, I'm just pointing out before, that the Rambam never ever quotes, never cites the Gemara and Pevav in Yoma, which says, you know, that there's, over tshuva me'ava, tshuva me'ira, and that's zedonos and so on and so on. Which I'm also suggesting is particularly striking, since he's the person, you know, who basically, not created, but who really developed the Hilchos Tshuva.
Right.
And to do that, he had to, like, take everything he could. So why miss out on, like, wow, whatever it means, it's an amazing statement.
Yeah.
I'm suggesting, and the other anomaly is that in Parakut, he speaks about Avos Hashem, which he spoke already about in the beginning of the Sefer. But he doesn't speak about it in Tshuva alone. I'm suggesting that Rambam may have understood the idea of Tshuva, Tshuva Me'ava and Tshuva Me'ira, as not being limited to Tshuva, but as being a din in Avodas Hashem. And maybe he was a little uncomfortable with the Nasos, Kiskuyos, or Kishkagos, you know, because, like, what does that even mean? I'm trying to suggest an explanation for what that means, not for the Rambam, but that works in light of the Rambam.
Answer.
So I'm just trying, and I'm just suggesting that Shir HaShirim, and you know the way that it's presented, both in the Pshat and also what the Rambam's trying to do with it, which is make it a paradigm of developing this impossible, my words again, but also indispensable relationship, is based on the same idea, meaning that you have to go through a process, you have to feel a certain sense of alienation and failure. That also establishes clearly your own limitations, the gap, which is unbridgeable, but Ribbono Shel Olam is going to bridge miraculously for you, and therefore the various stages that you go through, you know, in this what will become in the presentation, very much a yira ava, but you know. Superficial Yira Ava, deeper Yira Ava, ultimate deep Yira Ava. Again, he doesn't say he's doing this, but this is my read of it, I guess. So that's kind of what we... So let me just take another minute or two before I have to run. Again, sorry. Less time this week, but... So the next chapter is Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza. Again, which is just a very powerful pasuk, right? You know, draw me after you, let us run. There we go. You know, usually Narutza implies a certain initiative and an understanding and a certain eagerness, and it doesn't require the original Mashchuni, right? But this is exactly, again, that's the, you know, the Kedusha, that's the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Shir HaShirim. You know, it's Mashcheni Acharecha, the goal is not, you know, Narutza, and it's not, you know, mashkeni, you know, nebuch, you know, to go along. It's mashkeni, you know, and that, you know, kicks things off, has to kick things off. It has to be directed by the Rabbanu Shel Olam. It has to be his initiative in a way. But the goal is not merely to passively, you know, comply. The goal in the end is acharecha narutza. You know, for that to trigger, you know, the eager response, you know, the passion, the obsession, etc. But again, that's not a single, you know, action. That's like a whole process. It's like hashivenu Hashem Elecha, hashiveni Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, right? Chadish Shemenu Kekeda. You know, we in tshuva, this is certainly the case, but there's a constant back and forth duality, you know, between, you know, hashiveinu avinu l'sarasecha, karvinu malkeinu avonasecha, and, you know, our initiative and Rabbanu Shalom's initiative, you know, and, you know, abba, l'tahir, you know, messiahinoso, you know, poskelefanav, all these things represent not either or man's initiative or God's, you know, direction, but you know, the direction which triggers, you know, this tremendous, you know, surge of energy, you know, and so on. And again, that has a lot to do with Yira and Abba. So it's just an apt, just the words of Shiar Shirim as the name of the next chapter is already fascinating. So just one more minute, but the question? We're good. Yeah. So how does creation search for its creator? So again, just the Ha'ara in the beginning here again. So there are four realms in which man seeks the image of the creator as reflected in creation, which includes being, nature, and spirit. But again, one would have thought, and this is, you know, like typically when you know, somebody writes, a parshan, you know, writes about, you know, seeking the Ribbono Shel Olam in creation, so we have usually it has a much narrower meaning. You know, Shamayim Misapim Kavod Kel, Masiyot Magen Rakia, and that certainly that's also part of this. But for the Rav, again, this is very consistent in his other writings too, and in his general orientation. You know, the word creation has, you know, not just a physical and a cosmological connotation, but it also has a spiritual, you know, and psychological connotation. That's part of the Bria. Part of the Bria is man's capacity. So I think that is like just very clearly evident when you look at the. So what are they? The cosmic drama, that's Hashemayim Misap, that's the narrow one, frankly, which includes being, nature, spirit, okay? I'm sorry, oh yeah, sorry. The cosmic drama, the depths of the spiritual existence, right? That's not typically viewed as nature, right? That's usually contrasted with nature. But what he means is man's capacity for that, in other words, his, you know, his inner self, his psychology, the system of a priori concepts, that's a big theme for the Rav in general. Again, here he's talking about a priori concept of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but this idea of a priori concepts is, again, if you read Madel Dech Midod and Isha Halacha, that's like his view of Halacha as a system, is that it's, you know, Stako Baraisa Bara Alma, you know, means that the, you know, Torah was prior to the creation, means that the categories of Torah constitute like perfect existence, and our existence is the effort to approximate that, you know, but only to approximate it. So again, these are categories that he's very comfortable with, but you don't typically think of like theorizing, like, you know, or trying to relate to the abstractness of divinity as something that's part of nature. Well, we think of nature as, you know, science and, you know, the stars, you know, not human psychology and the capacity, you know, for inspiration within, and not, you know, the abstraction of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But this is a wider view of what nature means. And four, a particular religious facticity and transcendental experience. This refers to the experience of Maisa Mitzvos. So in these areas, religious reason explores the following elements respectively. And again, this to highlight what we just said, and then we'll stop. The lawfulness of the effect, right? The first cause of telos, the continuity of causal order, that's Hashemayim Zabram Kevod Kel, meaning the order and the impressiveness of the, you know, the awe and inspiration that you get from contemplating the Bria itself, you know, the argument from design, if you will, as it's sometimes called. But here we're not talking about arguments for the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're talking about like finding inspiration. But B, right, which normally would not be associated with nature or creation, is the complex of moral will, which is manifested paradoxically in the joint consciousness of absolute freedom and total obligation, the call of conscience and the despondency of the sinning soul, the aesthetic experience intertwined with the vision of transfinite sublimity, right? The order of cultural values, the metaphysical yearning, the essence, the process of cognition and life. Again, this is man's capacity, essentially, to be able to think about, you know, the meaning of life and the meaning of religion. Now, what's particularly interesting here, which we have to speak more about, is the paradoxical joint consciousness of absolute freedom and total obligation. Because again, in most either cultures or even in religions, these are mutually exclusive terms, the idea of sovereignty and surrender. And again, one of the things that the Rav is trying to show is that in Yadus, these two things, you know, not just coexist. One doesn't exist without the other. This is also a very, very pervasive theme in Rav Hirsch's writings. The idea that, you know, man is, you know, is a free being, he's sovereign, and he's a mitzvah at the same time. Essentially, again, talking about Hilchos Teshuva before, right smack in the middle of Hilchos Teshuva is Parakei, which Parakyud seems to be completely unrelated, to the details of Teshuva. Parakei Hilchos Teshuva is Bechira Chofshis, essentially. So, but it's right, in my opinion, in the middle, because it's a linchpin of the whole thing. I mean, of course, accountability, again, if you're a robot, you don't have star or nonesh, you don't have Teshuva. But I think it's more than that. It's this idea of willingly, it's not some nishma, essentially. It's like, ein ben chorin ele misha osik b'torah b'mitzvos, on the one hand, and gadol mitzuva, v'yosa, on the other. And it's the idea of willingly entering into a bris that then makes you meshubad, which then makes you an insider, which gives you the greatest freedom and the greatest partnership, in the process. So that's the second one, just to finish up. I want to talk more about that. Then the third one is the pinnacle of the system of pure concepts of understanding, a priori conception of the deity, distinct from any psychological experience, the essential crowning jewel of being. That's just the Ribbono Shel Olam abstractly. And then the fourth is the absolute dependence, the frustrated yearning and pulsing in man's spirit, right? The ecstasy of
the mystical masters.
The mystical, I'm still cut off. The mystical masters, what does that say?
Intuition.
The intuition of a sensible realm and the like. Okay, so we'll stop there. So, but these are the four elements which normally wouldn't be considered part of nature, maybe the first would. But again, they all speak to a certain very consistent, complex view. Consistent but complex. Okay.
Just a clarifier, was that around the book here?